Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNC 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
That's right. Welcome in. Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5. The game all around the world on the Game Nashville app. Good Friday evening, everyone. Chase McCabe alongside Teron Davenport of ESPN. He covers the Tennessee Titans for them. Calvin Smith behind the glass. He does some stuff for us, this and that. And there you go. Titans and Broncos coming up this weekend. But first, Teron, we must review, sadly, what took place at Nissan Stadium last Sunday. Is the reason why by the time this season is over, I'm not going to have any hair, because the Titans make me pull it out, because they lose 14-7 to the Bills at home, and they had every chance in the world to win that game.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you have one side doing really well and the other side just simply not getting it done. Collectively as a unit, they're losing, but at the end of the day, man, the offense is struggling, seriously. So it's something they have to get together.
I read an interesting article in The Athletic, and I've heard you bring this up before too, but that John Glennon put together, that when Mariota gets rid of the football in under 2.5 seconds, he's golden. It's great. Everything's good. Everything's wonderful. What does that mean? That means one read. That first read is available, and bam, get rid of the football. When he has to hold on to it, though, that's when he struggles.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is the objective is to get the ball out of his hands and into the hands of playmakers quickly. And that's something that we at ESPN have been talking about for quite some time. You know, we were one of the first. I'm not going to say me. I don't like saying that. So I'll just say ESPN. We looked at just the different things, and actually on talking with TD, Calvin and I discussed it as well. When you look at it, it's – I think Calvin was 2.7 seconds.
Before talking about Mariota's time to throw?
Yeah.
At the beginning of the year, it was almost at 3, and he's dropped it into the 2.75-ish range right now.
Right, right. So that's showing that they're kind of forcing him to get the ball out quicker, but a lot of that was from that Falcons game. And really the bottom line, because he has time on many of his attempts, but the bottom line is he has to get into more of that rhythm, has to be more decisive with the football and get rid of it. And the thing that can be frustrating for people watching Mariota is the fact that when he does see it, believe it, let it rip, and that thing is usually in the right spot. And it's just one of those things where they have to find out a way to speed up that process.
Yeah, and it also doesn't help when the offensive line, you know, they're having their struggles. Taylor Lewan came back, but you could definitely tell he had missed 4 weeks. It was a rough day for him. So that trickled down, because I truly believe how Lewan plays trickles down through the rest of the offensive line. So hopefully he can have a better week this week against the Broncos and pick up Roger Saffold, because they need some help.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, outside of A.J. Brown, you know, because A.J., he has some spice to him. You know what I mean? But I think outside of A.J., like before he got here, I really think Taylor Lewan was kind of like the catalyst for that offense as a whole. You know, they needed a spark. They needed someone to kind of light a fire. He would be the one to do it. So, for me, you're right. When you watch Lewan and Saffold, and I asked Lewan about this, just what's going on with the TE stunts. And Lewan, right away, he pointed to what he and Saffold have to do. But the thing that I like that he did was, you know, he took responsibility for what had happened. But instead of harping on that, he's looking towards a solution. And it just goes back to something that I've been saying all along that had to happen. You know, we talked about more reps together, that continuity, that communication. And that's exactly what Lewan said that they need. They need to get more time together. They need to get more reps. So that way that when that stunt comes, they know how to exchange. Or even just period, just being able to work off of each other, because the offensive line, I don't think there's a group in sports that's more dependent upon one another than the offensive line.
Right.
Right. That has to work in sync. That has to be the timing and everything. It has to be right. So that's something that they're going to continue to work on.
Yeah. And you sent me some videos of a breakdown that you had done of Roger Saffold and how he got beat a few times. And that was a big difference in the game because, as we all know, the offensive line, how they perform is going to trickle down to the rest of the offense. So giving Mariota time. Do you think this combination of Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis, the mix, has that been working? I think Derrick Henry's been fine. He's been the big dog and you've been feeding him, but Deion Lewis I have concerns with.
Yeah. The thing that's surfacing with Deion Lewis that is kind of confusing is the drops.
Right.
He has some very untimely. I mean, there's never a good time for drops, but he's had some untimely drops. And that's not a characteristic of Deion Lewis. You know, a guy who studied Darren Sproles, you know, back when he was. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, funny, a little background on Deion Lewis, because he wasn't always a receiving type of back. However, he got to Cleveland. He was working with North Turner, and North Turner said, listen, if you want last in this league, what you need to do, look at this guy right over here. His name happened to be Darren Sproles. And a lot of what Deion started to do as far as become a pass catcher, he patterned after Darren Sproles. No coincidence, you know, they played the Eagles last year. I talked to Deion about that, and Sproles as well. He's a pass-catching running back now. But the fact that he's dropping there are issues there because there have been some plays that have been left on the field mm-hmm. because of his drops. So that's something that they have to get right. I still like Deion Lewis running between the tackles. I like that. I'm not going to say the results are coming or here, but I would say they're coming. And he's a guy that can still get you positive yards running between the tackles because even though he's smaller, he runs hard. So that's something I want to see them continue to do. But bottom line, Derrick Henry needs more touches.
I agree.
He needs – there are just times where they pull him out, and I just feel like it's the wrong time.
And he's just – they're just starting to get him going. And I'm curious, and I know we're going to talk a lot about the Rod Smith signing, who they brought in this week as another running back. David Flewellen, of course, on IR. So they signed Rod Smith, elevated Dalen Dawkins as well. But I'm curious of if they're going to work Rod Smith into things, who is that going to take reps away from? Because, I mean, you got to find the rep somewhere, and I hope it's not Derrick Henry because, as you just said, once he gets going, that's when you really see him start to rack up the yards, and then they pull him out.
Well, why not have them both in the game at the same time?
That would be fantastic. I mean? Some two-back sets. And
they showed that look a few times. I'm not going to say they showed the look. They had the two guys – doing individual period work, working in tandem. So we'll see what happens there. But Rod Smith, I think that's a good sign. And we have a one-on-one with him. Yeah. I got that today in the locker room, so we'll get that later on. So stay tuned for that.
Defense continues to be the bright spot for the Tennessee Titans. They held the Bills to only 14 points. Unfortunately, that was enough for them to win. Now the kicking issues, you know, that was a part of things too. Cairo Santos, who now is a free agent, missed four field goals for the Tennessee Titans. So if he makes those, or at least three of them, it's a different ball game. But the fact of the matter is he didn't. But the defense, I still like what I'm seeing out of them as they continue to grow.
Yeah, I like what the defense is doing. But before we get into that, I want to just circle back to the offense.
Okay.
Because there are a couple things, well, three things that are happening that is really just it's destroying this team, right? It's destroying their production. One, the penalties, right? You saw the points that it cost them against the Bills, right? Jameel Douglas didn't play many snaps, but he cost them a touchdown in the limited snaps that he played, right?
Rotating him in?
I think they wanted to have a big look in that formation, right? In that time, and it worked. It just you had that. I forget what his penalty was. But it brought back the touchdown. But then it's just the same old, same old. You have penalties on first and second down, putting you in third and long situations, and then you compound the third and long with another penalty, and now it's third and from here to Memphis. You know what I mean? You can't have that. And the other thing is it's negating big plays. Now, one of the things that continues to be an issue and is dating back to Pittsburgh in week three of the preseason is that T.E. stunt. And that's something I'm going to continue to talk about that. You know, some of the guys I could tell, like, they're like, all right, look, man, enough. Well, you know what? Marcus Mariota is saying enough. So I asked Coach Vrabel about that. And here's what Coach Vrabel had to say when I asked him about the TE stunts that they're giving up.
Stop the penetrator, flatten him out, deliver him to the next guy, and then take the looper.
But
that's how we coach. Okay. If you're wondering how we coach the TE and the ET game. Same everywhere.
So is it just
flatten out the penetrator, punch, flatten him out, deliver him to the other guy, and then be inside out on the guy that's looping back around.
So
we run a lot of that on defense, and we just have to kind of anticipate it, and then when we don't get it, kick slide out of there and stay inside out on our guy. You're looking for the O-line tutorial.
Coach Mike Vrabel.
That's Coach Raves, man. I like that in him, though. So that's pretty much the issue that they're having. And one thing he said they're looking for that to keep happening, well, you know what? It's a copycat league. Mm-hmm. So you're going to continue to see those stunts, and you've seen them almost weekly. So keep an eye out for that. But when you talk about the defense, they are continuing to hold it down, right? This is a team that people show concern about rushing the passer, yep. Right? Well, I don't think that concern should really be as prevalent now. They're fourth in the NFL in collectively in sacks, 17 sacks this season. Harold Landry has four.
Yep.
I talked to him. We broke down one of his sacks for talking with TD, and I asked him, you know, sacks come in bunches, right? That's usually what happens for pass rushers. Why is that? And he talked about how it's when you're feeling like you're in your groove, you're feeling unstoppable. And he stopped short of saying that he's unstoppable right now, but expect to see some more sacks coming from Harold Landry.
Yeah, who is it that we both were just glowing about and hoping was going to have a huge season? Harold Landry.
Yeah, I told him, I said, I'm going to be honest with you, you know, my minimum for you this season was 10 sacks.
Yeah.
And he just kind of laughed and shook his head. So, yeah,
and
I mean, we definitely
– he's on track to get
he's
there.
On track for sure. Through five games, yeah. He has four. Oh, yeah, I would say he's on track. But then you got Reggie Gilbert, you know, coming in.
I like him.
One thing I like about him is effort and the dip,
yeah.
Right? And we talked about, because he was also on Talking with TD, we talked about just some of the drills that he works where he would run the hoop. So pregame before, it was in Jacksonville, right? I caught him before the game watching, you know, doing a workout. And he would have a tennis ball set up. And they would snap the ball. He'll come off the snap, and he would dip his shoulder as he ran the hoop and had to pick up the tennis ball.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was crazy because that drill transferred right over to his sack. So that's something to take note of. So he's another guy.
Yeah, and so I like what the defense is doing. And you know, who knows? Jeffrey Simmons could be close to rejoining, and that's only going to help. Not right away. He's going to have to get acclimated and all of that, but I do like what the defense is doing. When we come back, Teron, we're going to talk to Jeff Legwald from ESPN. He covers the Broncos for them. Of course, familiar with this area. We will get a little more information on the Denver Broncos. We'll do that next. Chase and TD, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Up, no rap, no crap, your boy.
We're back, ESPN, 102.5 The Game, Chase and TD. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport hanging out.
That flavor in your ear. That's what we're about to bring you,
yes.
Folks. The flavor in your ear. You know, a Nashville flavor in your ear now in Denver.
Yes. Let's say hello to Jeff Legwald from ESPN. He covers the Broncos for them. Jeff, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We are doing well. Excited about this matchup this weekend. But the Broncos coming off their first win of the season against the LA Chargers. And I know it's been an up and down, rough season, really. So far for Vic Fangio in his first year with the Broncos, but they get that win. What did you see out of them as they were able to go in and beat the Chargers?
Well, there's probably something to be said for Fangio's ability to sort of keep everybody pointed in the right direction. When you're talking about a team that lost two games this year on the last play. They've had two kicks on the last play to beat them in games they thought they had won. So he is somehow sort of kept them on the track, even despite a big pile of injuries that, you know, sort of everybody's got to deal with. But they've had them at corner and in the offensive line, which was the exact two places they could handle injuries the least this year. So all those things working together, they felt pretty good about going to L.A. and getting a win. But They did win there last year too, and it didn't really spur them on to major things. So I think they're hoping to get a little more out of it this time.
What has been your impression so far of Vic Fangio, a guy that's been a coordinator for a very long time, finally gets a chance to be a head coach, and John Elway taps him to be that guy? But I've heard he's an old school, kind of has that mentality. What's been your impression of him so far?
Yeah, I think he's a combination. I'm not sure you could coach players in the league for as long as he has and be as sort of universally liked. I mean, I've talked to so many of his former players who've told me, yeah, Vic, you know, Vic straight up, you know, 100% truthful, never, you know, they don't feel like he ever leads them, you know, astray to when he's trying to make a point, and that he takes the heat for the players, and he's done that here. So, you know, and on one hand, you know, he waited until he was 61 to be a head coach, and on the other hand, he's this guy who kind of, you know, he stopped doing some of the sort of the rookie hazing they've done here for a long time. And, you know, he said, I just stopped it. And we asked him why. And he said, well, I just thought it was silly. And, you know, so things like that, he kind of has a new flavor on a guy who's been in the league for over 30 years. And, you know, he is as straightforward and as blunt as it gets. We asked him about penalties a few days ago, and he said, well, that's an indictment of coaching. And, you know, a lot of guys would have thrown the sort of the players under the bus and say, well, it's execution and they're not playing the way they're coached and all that stuff. But now he just said, that's an indictment on coaching. So it's been that kind of a ride. You know, he's been very upfront, very straightforward, hasn't hid from any of it.
That's a great point about Coach Fangio. And one of the things that I noticed back when I used to cover the 49ers and he was the DC there, Eric Reed, he actually told me that he's never been more prepared for games than he was under Vic Fangio. And then even you got Ed Donatell, you see some of the drills that they will work on, transfer to games. How are the players communicating to you just as far as, like, are they – do they feel like they're very, very prepared for games and really benefiting from his tip sheets?
Oh, Turn, I think you're exactly right. And you know, I think even former players like Champ Bailey was at practice today, and, you know, he was watching kind of how they were going through things. And, you know, Ed Donatell was a secondary coach here for a little bit when Champ was playing here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of it looked familiar, but Khalil Mack called Vic Fangio a mad genius, and he really is. And I think last week's game is the first game I really charted when it was all done and said, you know, I think they're starting to get it, because it is a complicated scheme. It asks a lot of players in different situations. They don't always get to just line up and play, but if they do get it, they can play fast out of it, and I think ultimately that's his goal, but it does take a minute for it to sink in, and I think they're just starting to get it, and I would really expect, even with Bradley Chubb out of the lineup, I would expect Von Miller to have a stretch at some point where he puts a bunch of games together and people see what he can do in the defense, like guys as far back as Ricky Jackson have done in the defense.
Dome Patrol. That's right. That's right. Now, one of the other things that are really important in that defense, obviously, is the secondary. You mentioned Donatell, how he was a secondary coach. And, of course, I would assume that's his area of focus now, you know, even though he's a DC. What are the Broncos doing at cornerback? I know Bosby went down. You got Chris Harris there. But what else? What's left? What can they do?
Well, they've been really impacted by it. They sort of put all their free agency money at corner. You know, they felt like Kareem Jackson would play safety here, and that's where he's played. But yeah. Bryce Callahan was a guy they signed in free agency, and their hope was Callahan and you know, could man one of the outside spots. They could play Chris Harris at nickel. And then Kareem Jackson could play wherever they needed him, you know, corner or safety, or just do things down to down. But Callahan hasn't played at all because of a foot injury and may not play this year. They don't know yet, but that's really impacted them. And you know, like you say, Bosby was a guy they sort of found in the Alliance of American Football, and they got him in here. And Vic had coached him before briefly and said that, you know, he was really going to fit. That was a real surprise for them a little bit. And now he'll miss the rest of the year with a neck injury. So they're kind of patchwork in spots at corner. They rotate a lot, but you know, it's Chris Harris and Kareem Jackson are the main focal points, and they kind of build around that.
Jeff Legwald here with us, covers the Broncos for ESPN here on Chase and TD. And Joe Flacco was brought in to be the stopgap at quarterback, because I know the Broncos have had their struggles at finding someone since Peyton Manning. So far, it's been decent, but he has some weapons that he's been able to use: Cortland Sutton, Emmanuel Sanders, Philip Lindsay. How would you say Joe Flacco has managed this offense so far?
Well, they like him an awful lot here. I think what he's done that they've been missing since Peyton was here was be the quarterback Monday through Saturday, too. You know, you got to have a guy that will mingle in the cafeteria and sit with guys and do all of those things as the front of the line player. He's done a lot of that, and you know, and I think the offense fits him, and I think they're starting to discover what they do best. They've had moments when they've driven the ball against, you know, some pretty good defenses. You know, they moved the ball better against Chicago than a lot of people have. They just couldn't close out the drives, or didn't close out the drives. So, you know, Green Bay as well, they moved the ball like crazy against Green Bay, but, you know, they got turnovers, got them that time. So they're just starting to get their balance a little bit, and, you know, we'll see how it goes. But Sutton's an ascending player. He's still got room to grow, and he could look like a lot like Demaryius Thomas before it's all said and done.
Now, you know, I'm not going to let you get out of here without a draft question. You know what I mean? I'm not going to let that happen. So let's talk this year's draft class. Noah Font, I know that he's, you know, a guy who's kind of in that picture, in that mix as far as one of Flacco's options. What have you seen from him?
He's, you know, he's getting better. You know, this offense, Rich Scangarello, the coordinator here, worked with Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, you know, and has met with Mike Shanahan, where the roots of this offense go. You know, McVay's offense, the Niners offense, this one, all the roots go to Mike Shanahan at some point. And the tight end, other than quarterback, there's no tougher position to learn in this offense than tight end, because you're fully involved in the passing game. You're fully involved in the run game as a blocker. You have to be well-versed in pass protection. You got to know all the routes. So Fant, they're just starting to get a little better about having him do what he can do best right now, and that's why he's had moments when he's really shown the athleticism. And then other moments, he looks like a guy really trying to, you know, when you get lost when you're driving and you kind of make that face, that sometimes he's kind of got that face when he's trying to figure out where he should be in the formation. But he's getting there, and I'm not sure there are many linebackers that can run with him in the open field when he gets. He's kind of a long strider, but when he gets it going, he's a legit 4-5 guy.
No doubt.
Jeff, you've covered this league for a long time and spent some time covering the Titans, so I know you remember Mike Munchak when he was the O-line coach, and now he's in Denver coaching the offensive line. But I thought it was a unique situation because he was the runner-up, I believe, to be the head coach, and then ultimately decides to come there because of his family being out that way. How has that worked out, and do you see him being there long, or do you think he gets another shot at being a head coach?
Well, you know, I actually covered Mike as a player, which I remind him of a lot when he's telling me I don't know what I'm doing. But Munch is – I thought it said a lot about Munch as a person and Vic Fangio as a person, that two guys that went for the same job sat down and decided it was the best thing for them both if they could work together. And Vic Fangio has given – Munchak an awful lot of responsibility. You know, he's sort of like the run game coordinator, and you know, Fangio speaks so highly of him now. And Mike's granddaughter lives here, and his daughter lives here now too. So I think it would take an awfully good job to get him out of Denver, because I think he likes it here. He likes the situation, and he likes working for Vic. So I think it would have to be an awful good one, but you never know when they start dangling the head coaching salary your way. But right now he is very happy with the family situation here for him and the football situation.
Well, he's a Hall of Famer, but he's a Hall of Fame person too. So we appreciate you taking the time tonight to talk to us, and we look forward to the game on Sunday.
Oh, anytime, fellas. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. See you Sunday.
Jeff,
see you, Matt Van Tia.
All right.
Jeff Legwall covers the Broncos for ESPN, and yeah, Munch, of course. With everything going on this the off season and him, you know, applying to be the head coach and ultimately doesn't get it. I know some of us around here were like, would it be weird if they brought him back as the offensive line coach, because he was so good during his time here and then with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So we appreciate Jeff Legwald for taking the time to talk to us about the Denver Broncos. We got to get into those running backs, though. I mentioned Philip Lindsay, but they have the two-headed monster in the backfield that the Titans are going to have to watch out for. We'll do that next. Chase and TD, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back. Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game on the Game Nashville app. Calvin Smith behind the glass.
Yes, sir.
Broncos and Titans. And we've mentioned it that the Broncos have two running backs that can hurt you. Now, everybody knows about Philip Lindsay. He came on the scene last year, a tremendous story. He leads the way with 327 yards on the season, but Royce Freeman has been another one that has kind of created that two-headed monster for the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, no doubt. They have a two-headed monster, and the thing that's pretty cool is it's kind of like thunder and lightning, right? I mean, you got the 6 foot, 238-pound back in Royce Freeman, and then you got the scat guy in Philip Lindsay. And Philip Lindsay, he's a few years ago, right? You had Danelle Pumphrey. I think it was, I'm going to say 17, a couple years ago, 2017, coming out of San Diego State. All-time leading rusher in college football. The Eagles got him. What you see Philip Lindsay doing is what I envisioned Danelle Pumphrey to be.
Right.
Unfortunately, he's not on the team anymore, and obviously he's not doing what Lindsay's doing. But one of the things that I notice about Pumphrey that really reflects in Lindsay's game is just everything is always positive. I watched 3.5 games of the Broncos this year, and I could count maybe 2 or 3 times he was tackled for a loss. He's 5'8", 190. Yeah. Size is not a skill, folks.
It's amazing, too, because you see a story like that, like, okay, he's somebody that they don't really know much about. Mm-hmm. He makes the team and then ends up having the season that he had. Usually what happens is teams will go, okay, we got tape on him now. So they study and they do breakdowns. And he's still effective for them. So he's showing that he belongs in this league. And this is somebody that the Titans are going to have to contain if they want to win on Sunday.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the thing is, in watching the two, Freeman and Lindsay, Freeman is bigger, but he doesn't run with the same power that Lindsay runs with, just because there's a more suddenness. He'll pick that hole and squirts right through it. And then it's almost like when he's running inside, it's almost like he's playing peekaboo with linebackers. You know, and I cannot wait to ask Rashawn. Now, I'm hoping the Titans win, so they'll be a little bit more forthcoming with it. But I can't wait to ask Rashawn Evans, Jayon Brown, and those linebackers, even, you know, Vaccaro as well. I can't wait to ask them, was it difficult tracking where he's going to go behind the offensive lineman?
Yeah.
Because that's literally what he does. Like, he'll play peekaboo. And he just all of a sudden pops out on you. And before you know it, he's up on you because you can't track him behind the bigger offensive lineman, the interior guy. So I just think Philip Lindsay is a complete back. There's nothing really special about him as far as, like, he's not extremely fast. He's not extremely big, not extremely strong. He's efficient. So if there is some, I would say that's special. But he catches the ball out of the backfield. You see them using different formations. Like, they'll motion him, you know, and let him go against a linebacker lined up outside. I showed you how to use the Texas route combo with him. They do that. There are a lot of things. They have him run the circle route, you know, and that's something that they do in third down situations. He's an outstanding back, in my opinion. So I think they're in good shape there. The Titans definitely have their hands, you know, full with stopping that attack. And it's going to be interesting how that whole thing works. And even when you look at Freeman, you know, granted, he's not, in my opinion, as good of a back as Lindsey is. He's still decent, you know, and he's somebody that, you know, they run inside with. He could bang it inside. Sometimes he'll break it out. He's statistically, if you look, 55 carries, 250 yards. He's averaging 4.6 per carry. I mentioned being 238 pounds. He has zero touchdowns. You know who they're giving the ball to inside the 5-yard line? A little 190-pounder. Phillip Lindsey has 69 carries, 327, three TDs. He's averaging 4.7 yards per carry. And this is one of those things, Calvin, where you know how I talk about stats could be a little misleading sometimes?
Yes.
Well, if you look, Lindsey's averaging 4.7 per carry. Freeman's averaging 4.6. But I guarantee you, if you watch or if you talk to coordinators, they would rather have Freeman on the field than Lindsey. Even though we're talking about 0.1 yard difference, Lindsey's the better running back, and he's by far the better running back.
Yeah, and he's shown it. What is it about Broncos running backs that we're number 30 that seems to work out for them?
Dadgummit. And you know what? I have so much respect for Terrell Davis. And when Lindsey first, you know, wore number 30 as an undrafted free agent.
Right.
Living in his parents' basement. Because I don't know if you know that story. He lives in his parents' basement. But I was just like, yo, man, come on, man. Don't do that to a legend. Don't do that to the legend.
But he got Terrell the blessing. Davis.
Yeah, he got the blessing. But, man, I say even like Dez Bryant wearing 88. Man, don't do that.
I know. Yeah, I didn't like that either as a longtime Cowboys fan. Now, you brought up that Phillip Lindsey can also catch the ball out of the backfield. When you look at their stats, Teron, and their receivers, everybody knows about Cortland Sutton leading the way, 401 yards. Emmanuel Sanders, 307 yards. With 142 receiving yards, it's Phillip Lindsey. So he's third on the list in receptions as well as the leading rusher.
Versatile back, man. Versatile back. And then I mentioned the combos that they use him with. That's one of the things that I want to get into when we talk about Noah Fant. And Fant is a guy I talk about how
I like
they use formations. Well, sometimes you'll have Flacco and then you'll have Lindsey on his left and Freeman on the right. And they'll run that old school Madden play, you know, where the guys run flare outs and you pick your guy. But then at other times, they'll motion Fant into the backfield and they'll run different route combos there. I really like how they're using Fant and incorporating him into the scheme. I think, as Legwell said, I think you're going to continue to see him get better. I had him on my fantasy team, but I dropped him after week one. But I think you're going to see more from him. And he is a guy. There was one play. They used the same type of look as Jonnu Smith got the 57-yarder on. He had a touchdown, a 28-yard one. So he pulled away from the defense. So I think really with him, it's all about running that route combination where you have like a tiered combo, right? You have the Texas combo where he's running the angle route, Lindsey, and then you have – a dig or some type of dagger or like a crossing route from the tight end, and you're just putting the LBs in a bind.
We all feel pretty good about the Titans secondary, right? I mean, they we feel pretty good about them. They're going to have to work on Sunday. Cortland Sutton and Emmanuel Sanders is showing that he's still got something left in the tank. They're going to have to contain both those guys.
Oh, no doubt about it. And I like the way – I'm saying I like a lot about their offense, but I do like the way they're isolating Cortland Sutton and they're moving him across the formation, giving him different opportunities to catch the football. You see them, they go big, and he's the only receiver on the field. They work play action, and they get him on the crossing route. Then they find ways just to get him one-on-one against corners. So, you know what? Adoree Jackson, Malcolm Butler, they're going to have their big boy shoes on because Sutton is a 6'4", 220-pound receiver, and he runs really well also. So that's going to be a challenge. I showed you how they work the smash combo with he and Emmanuel Sanders. Yep. But then they also do things where they'll have whoever's in the slot. Like sometimes they'll have Sutton as the slot in a twin formation, right? And he'll run the defense off, and you'll have Sanders coming underneath, and they'll flip-flop it. So they find ways to get their guys involved, and I think that's key because it seems like he has Scangarello, that is. It seems like he has a separate package for Manny Sanders, for Sutton, for Fant, for Lindsey. And I think that's what you have to do to get the max out of your playmakers.
When we come back, we'll stick with the Broncos theme as we dissect them, but we'll shift to the defensive side of the ball. There's a guy that's been a pretty good player for them for a long time that the Titans are going to have to worry about. We will discuss Von Miller next here on Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let's go, let's go. Hello. Good morning. Hello. Good morning. Bringing the beat. Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Calvin Smith nodding his head back there.
That's some get-up song right there. Yeah. That's some get-up music right there. Hello.
Hey, the Titans
good
are
going to
they're gonna have to get up against the Denver Broncos and their defense that they're going to to go up against, led by Von Miller. And everybody that's thinking, maybe Von Miller's lost a step. I think Von Miller is still very dangerous. Now, I'm curious to see what other pass rushers they have with Chubb out. But Von Miller continues to be a thorn in offenses' backsides.
I don't care what the stats say, the two sacks or whatnot. Yeah. Von Miller is a top five pass rusher in this league. The stats aren't going to tell you that right now, but you ask the guys that are in charge of blocking him, they'll tell you.
You still have to respect him.
And the thing is with him, and you have to respect him, the thing is with him is – he's a master of multiple things. We had Chuck Smith on, I believe it was our first show, and he talked about just pass rushing, being a culture, having more than one or two moves in your toolbox. Von Miller has a bunch. He has a bunch. And the thing
he's added through his career.
Yeah, and the thing that's so cool is he has so many elite moves, and they're all kind of like tiered off of each other. And you look at when he first got into the league, he was known as a guy who could run that circle, dip that shoulder, but he would come out of his stance like he was a slingshot, like somebody had him in a slingshot and just shot him out there. So what ends up happening? You have so many offensive linemen rushing to get back into their drop, into their set, and they end up off balance. And then you would see this 6'2", 245-pound guy, 6'1", whatever he is, you would see him blowing 6'6", 300-plus-pound guys out of the water, right? Because what would happen is they're off balance, and then what he would do is convert that speed to power. He would show the speed, and then convert it to power. And you're like, how on earth is he making those guys fall like this or even throwing them? Because it was almost like Reggie White, you know what I mean? But Reggie was just pure strength. But he's just using leverage, and that's how he would get them. But then on top of that, once they started trying to set and brace themselves for the power, what does he do? Develops a spin move. That dude is basically unstoppable as a pass rusher.
So with the problems at the offensive line, what they have had this year, now Lawan being back in game two, you hope that it's going to get a little bit better. But obviously Von Miller is going to be a focus of their attention. Now there will be others, but how can this offensive line stop somebody like Miller?
Well, one of the things they have to do, and it sounds cliche or repetitive because that's what you keep hearing with this offense, but they have to stay out of third and longs. They have to stay out of situations where Von Miller could just be like, listen, you know what? I know they're not running the ball. I'm just going to pin my ears back and rush the passer. They have to stay out of those. Another way to stay out of those third and longs is you got to keep from having penalties. Right, when you have a speed rusher like Von Miller, whether he's got both hands in the dirt and coming out of the track stance or coming out standing up, you cannot get those false starts. And that sets you back. So those are a couple of things they have to do for Von Miller specifically, but they're going to see other things from that defense that they'll have to work on also.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear Taylor Lewan standing up after the game, you know, saying, yeah, that was my bad on whatever play it was because he got called for some penalty. That's what they can't do, and they have to be more of a disciplined football team. I think that starts obviously with the head coach, with Mike Vrabel, and he said that. He's admitted that, that they got to have more discipline. But I'm with you on that. They got to stay away from the penalties if they want to be able to win this game. Now, the safeties, you know, they're going to present a threat to the Tennessee Titans in moving the offense. Justin Simmons, Kareem Jackson. I know you were studying some film on them and have learned a little bit about those guys.
Yeah, well, Justin Simmons is a guy that I liked dating back to when it was 16, when he was in Tampa, in mm-hmm. St. Pete's for the East-West Shrine. He stood out immediately. So at Boston College, you know, the guy showed range. He showed the ability to play in the box. That range is still there, you know, as an NFL player. And he's a very good safety. But then you look at Kareem Jackson. And one of the things that really fascinated me is because I went back a little bit further and watched some of their games. And teams were able to run the football against them. The Broncos are giving up, I think it's 126.4 yards rushing per game. They've gotten better with Kareem Jackson in there as the safety. And it's just interesting when you have a DB, you know, because that's what he is, a DB that is able to play corner and safety. And he kind of converted from corner to safety. He did a lot with Mike Vrabel as his DC mm-hmm. in Houston. So today I asked Coach Vrabel about Kareem Jackson and what stands out to him. So here's what he had to say about Kareem Jackson.
He's got really good instincts. He's got really good toughness. He's twitched up. He throws his body around. I will always respect Kareem as a person first and foremost, and as a player second. I mean, this is a guy that I, you know, will know well after football. Great mentor for my kids and other guys' kids that would come to practice. I mean, this is a real football player, real dude, real person.
Coach Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, so that's what he had to say about Kareem Jackson. And the thing is, in watching them, because the other thing we want to get into are the corners, right? Mm-hmm. You have Chris Harris, who's a legit player.
Oh, yeah, has
been. A top-notch corner. But after that, there's not really much. So Kareem Jackson is someone that I saw them at times, even last week against the Chargers, they had him bump inside and cover the slot. So he kind of played like a nickel corner, and they brought in another safety. Big thing here, Bryce Callahan is out. He right. was the guy, you heard what Legwell said, he was the guy they signed to go along with Harris and be their corners. He's out. The guy that was playing last week when Callahan wasn't in, Devontae Bosby, is out. They went and signed Cody Sensabaugh, but to be honest with
you. We're familiar with him.
Yeah, of course, right? He was here. To be honest with you, they're in trouble at cornerback. Even Duke Dawson out of Florida, he was limited in practice on Wednesday, I think all week, frankly, and he's questionable. So I know we're saying run the football, and that's something that they should do, but there should be opportunities to pass the football against the secondary.
Well, I heard that when you had that stat a few minutes ago about how many rushing yards they're getting up, I heard a diesel truck start up in my head because I think that's what they need to do with Derrick Henry is just run him down their throat. Yeah. And then with the cornerback situation, I mean, that's going to open up, you know, some passes as well for young A.J. Brown, the yak monster, yeah. as you call him.
That slapping sound, that was the facepalm behind the glass, you know, Calvin putting his palm in his face in his palm, rather. But, yeah, you're right. There's going to be opportunities for young A.J., the yak monster. And speaking of A.J., I want to shout him out. I wrote about it on Thursday. But, I mean, this dude is literally doing everything right.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Checked into the second home game with a Mariota jersey on. But more importantly, connecting with the fans and motivating guys and girls to do something with themselves, right? What did he do on his IG Live? He said, hey, look, I want you guys to send me your grades.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick somebody. And then the dude was randomly calling people. You know what I mean? Like, this guy is doing everything.
He's gone to some high school football games.
Going to high school football. He personally delivered a jersey to a kid from MLK basketball team. He delivered it to his house, a signed jersey, because he wanted to give him a shout-out for his grades.
We had talked to some people that cover Ole Miss, you know, when the Titans drafted him. And that was one thing that they all said about him, of not only is he, are you getting a really good football player, but you're getting a really good person. So,
yeah.
So far you're seeing that and the impact that he's making on the community. So that has been very, very good to see. So when we come back, we'll continue to set up the Denver Broncos versus the Tennessee Titans. They made a signing this week, and it's not the one that everybody's been talking about. There's another one that I want to ask Teron about that I really like. I think that this guy can help the Titans. We'll discuss that next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
That's right. It's time to go eat, put the women and children to bed, and go hunting for dinner. Joe Kane style, baby. The program. If you haven't seen it, I suggest you go watch it.
Teron, I like it.
Hey, listen, man, it's all about having fun, right? I think it's really here's the thing. There aren't many things I love doing more than what we're doing now, right? Yeah. Just talking football. So I really want that to show. And we have fun in the studio. We have fun talking shop, man, and that's what we do.
Yeah, and you know what? I love this team that we have with you and Calvin and myself, because like I'm dragging today. I'm a little tired. It's just, you know, late Preds game and
right.
Long day. But you guys are picking me up. You're helping me out. The energy drink's helping out a little bit. But that's teamwork makes the dream work.
That's what it is.
So the rushing attack for the Tennessee Titans.
This will get you going, Chase. When I get in this conversation.
Yeah, well.
I promise I won't bang the table. I promise.
Denver giving up 126.4 rushing yards per game. Titans are rushing for about 115.6 per game, which is 15th best in the NFL. We know Derrick Henry is the lead back. He's the workhorse.
Mm-hmm.
Deion Lewis hasn't been what they needed him to be. This week they signed Rod Smith. Rod Smith spent some time with the Dallas Cowboys, obviously playing behind Ezekiel Elliott. I think he was with the Giants to start the year.
Yes.
After being released from the Cowboys. Curious signing. I'm like, okay, because they also brought Dalen Dawkins up from the practice squad. But this seems like somebody that they're planning to use, and they think he can help them.
Yeah, and Dawkins kind of gives you more of what you already have.
Yeah.
In Deion Lewis.
He's kind of that speedy.
Speed, but they... He's another one. He's urgent when he runs. He runs with a purpose. But I think when you look at Rod Smith, and the thing that is interesting to me, and the thing that I just completely overlooked, is his size. And I remember in the locker room, was it Wednesday? I'm going to say Wednesday. I was standing there, and I saw this dude walk by, and I'm like, what outside linebacker did they sign? I don't remember seeing anything. I really thought he was an OLB. But, in fact, he's a running back. 6'3", 235 pounds. We got to see him on Wednesday. And he was standing. I didn't realize he was as big as he was even further until I saw him stand next to Derrick Henry. And the guys are almost the same size. And then we got to see them kind of during individual period. They worked together in a tandem. He lined up at fullback.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask. Does he kind of line up in the fullback spot?
I think that's a possibility. And he has that in his background. He played fullback. Thank you. He played fullback there. Who was that with? I want to say with Seattle, I believe it was. I want to say Seattle. Initially, he was converted. I'm almost positive you are correct.
That was his first team. 2015, yeah. He was in Seattle, and then 15 to 18 with the Cowboys.
So he has that in his background. And for me, when I look at that, the other thing, he catches the ball out of the backfield. So maybe if you have him as a fullback, it won't be as predictable. Or even if you want to spell Derrick Henry, it's not as predictable because you're still getting a reliable guy catching the ball out of the backfield.
Well, 2 years ago for the Dallas Cowboys, he had 4 touchdowns on the season. So
they were
using him. Now, you know, I understand playing behind Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, it's kind of like Tony Pollard now. Mm. You're going to get some scraps. There's not going to be much meat left on that bone. But it's still important to have a guy like that. And with Deion Lewis having his struggles, I like that they have brought in somebody else because who knows? It might help Deion Lewis because they could do the same thing that you're talking about with Derrick Henry, have some two-back sets, but have Lewis and Smith on the field at the same time.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think when you mentioned the Ezekiel Elliott thing, the fact that there were times they pulled a top three running back in the league, they pulled him off of the field to give Smith reps. I think that says a lot, right? Because, and we know how much the Cowboys rely on Zeke Elliott. So that says a lot for Rod Smith.
Yeah, so I like this signing a lot, and I think it's a, you know, they made a couple of different roster moves. Of course, they released Cairo Santos, signed Cody Parkey to be the kicker. Davin Quisenberry was also released because they had 11 offensive linemen, and they added two running backs in Rod Smith and then Daylon Dawkins making another appearance with the Tennessee Titans. So carrying four running backs right now.
Yeah, yeah, and they brought Quisenberry back. He's on the practice squad, so at least he's still in the building. But, yeah, you're right. Rod Smith is a signing. It's one of multiple moves, but it kind of floated under the radar. I actually got to talk to Rod Smith because I know a lot of fans don't really know a lot about him, a lot of media folks also, to be honest. So I sat down with Rod Smith during locker room today. Here's my sit down with the running back.
First things first, growing up in the Indiana area, did you grow up a Colts fan?
Definitely grew up a Colts fan. Kind of stopped cheering for him once they let my man Peyton go. But yes, it was always good going to watch. You know what I'm saying, watching the games on TV. You know, always Sunday used to get in the living room and just watch the games with family.
Then Vrabel earlier, he talked about, you know, how he knows you dating back to Ohio State. Do you have any particular memory? I mean, obviously he was defense, you were offense, but do you have any memories of Vrabel back then?
Oh yeah, I remember there was a point I was switched to defense for a couple weeks, and he was a linebacker coach.
Okay.
And you know what I'm saying, he just took me under his wing, just showed me certain stuff. And you know, when Vrabel was in the league, he was a great special team coach. I mean, a special team player. And I kind of like just naturally took on that role just to, you know, somewhere to get on the field, you know. And I was always the athlete, so I like playing defense too. So I got an opportunity to do both, you know what I'm saying, play running back on offense, and then special teams, I get to go down there and hit somebody.
Yeah, and that's the thing that he mentioned, special teams with you. It takes a certain mindset to be able to go out there and excel from that side of things. What mindset does that take, though?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really look at it as a mindset. That's just who I am. I just feel like I'm an athlete. And so you put me on the field, I can do something. I can make a play some way to stand out. You know, whether if it's on special teams or when I get my opportunity in the offense, definitely make the most of it. So, I don't know. I just feel like I'm a complete all around player. Just, you know what I'm saying, got a good understanding for the game. It's just, you know, when I step on the field, I just know how to play ball.
To me, it's almost like a Malcolm X by any means necessary most mindset. That's why I mentioned that. There was a time where you had to play a little bit of fullback. Is that within your wheelhouse to be able to do both fullback and just regular tailback?
I mean, I know I can do it. I can do it. I'm a good, you know what I'm saying, I'm a good pass protector. So I know I can do it, and I've done it before. But I'm a running back. Running back first. But like I mentioned before, wherever you put me at, you know what I'm saying, put me in a situation where it's giving me an opportunity to make a play, I can make it.
And that's the thing, because I watched in Dallas, you catch the ball out the backfield well. I mean, there were times they took Ezekiel Elliott out the game to put you in. So what is your style as a running back? What do you bring to the table?
Versatility, being able to catch it, block, run routes, you know what I'm saying? And at the same time, you know what I'm saying, I got good vision. I'm not a good route. So I just feel like being able to be an all-around player, it helps you last in the league. I ain't never really got the opportunity to be a true starter or start like that, you know. But you know what I'm saying, I make the most of my opportunities when I get a chance.
And then to wrap it up, you have a younger brother that's not a bad football player. You guys talk a lot through this whole, you know, with you guys not being on the same team anymore?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We talk pretty much every other day, if it's not through text or if it's through phone. Not through text or over the phone. You know, he was one of the first people I called, you know what I'm saying, told him I was back. I had the opportunity, you know what I'm saying, to come try out in Tennessee. And he was just happy for me. If you got a sibling, a younger sibling or an older sibling, you know, that love is thick, you know. You know, we always just in each other's corner and wish nothing but the best for each other.
Appreciate you, man.
Running back Rod Smith with Teron and the tunes of DJ Who Pooted, a.k.a. Darren Bates, in the background in the locker room.
Yeah, it's not quite Club Dub, but, you know, it's turning up with the Titans, I guess you could say.
I'm glad they keep it clean.
Yeah, well, you know, Calvin did a good job of, because it was actually even louder than that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So Calvin cleaned that thing up pretty well. But, yeah, Rod Smith, I think, is a guy who definitely could come in and help. The younger brother that we referred to, you know who that is?
I don't.
Number 54 for the Cowboys, none other than Jalen Smith.
I did not realize they were related.
Yes, sir. Rod was actually, when Jalen got drafted, I remember, because I followed that closely, Jalen Smith was actually my top-rated prospect that year. A linebacker, my top-rated prospect that year. But he was awesome. So I remember they showed when he got drafted in the second round, who was sitting right next to him.
It was a steal.
I mean, high risk, high reward. Yeah. You know what I mean? But he got drafted, and sitting right next to him was Rod Smith. And he was one of the first people, you know, that he turned and hugged. So it's cool. I was glad to be able to talk to him a little bit about that.
Yeah, and like I said, I think he's somebody that can help this team. You're not asking him to carry the ball on every play. Derrick Henry is going to do that. He's going to be the workhorse. But it's just another weapon in the arsenal that Arthur Smith can use as the offensive coordinator. So
No doubt about it.
I am, as the kids say, here for it.
So you're here for it, huh?
I am here for it.
Can confirm the kids say that, Chase.
Yes, yes. But, yeah, you're one of them.
And, you know, a big part of that running attack, and we've gotten on him, right, Roger Saffold.
Yeah.
But he's a big part of that running attack. And that was one of the things that Mike Vrabel said, because I asked him, you know, what is there positive about Saffold? What positive? And because he kept saying that there's a lot of positive. And he pointed to the running game. I asked Saffold about it. He pointed to the running game. And that is something that I will say looks good from Saffold. He's done a solid job run blocking. There are some issues pass blocking. But I think, you know, when you get a guy like Saffold, and there was – I want to go to – man, this is getting crazy, man. I'm using numbers like this. But there was a statistical thing that I saw.
Uh-oh. You're using numbers. Analytics.
Under performance. I'm trying to find this here. I was impressed about it, to be honest with you. Yeah. So if you look at the offensive linemen, Roger Saffold has covered the most distance in yards, 3,194.6 yards. Hat tip to Next Gen Stats. And then if you look at max speed, he hit 16.1 miles per hour. Now let me tell you something. You get a big Bama like that running that fast, watch out. That play, I'm going to venture to say that the time that he was doing that was on Jonnu's touchdown. Yeah. If you go back, and I had Jonnu cracking up when talking with TD because we broke that play down. Not touchdown, excuse me, 57-yard run.
That almost was a touchdown.
It should have been a touchdown.
I know.
Sometimes you're not sure if you can outrun the guy, so you curl it back in, and that's what he did. But in that run, you're focusing on Jonnu. But if you look, there's a number 76 hauling tail. I was cracking up, and I asked Jonnu, I said, hey, did you go shout out your man, Roger Saffold, on this one? And he said he didn't talk yet about it, but he was cracking up. I guess he didn't recognize it. But I would say that was when he was running 16 miles an hour.
Well, look, when the big guy can run that fast, that's going to help you right there. It's Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5, The Game. When we come back, the Broncos have been known for getting off to a fast start. The Titans are going to have to try and limit that if they want to get a win, and they have to get off to a fast start. We'll do that next. Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5.
This is Rashawn Evans, linebacker for the Tennessee Titans. You're listening to Chase and TD.
In the danger zone. Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5, The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport of ESPN, Calvin Smith on the ones and twos behind the glass. So the Titans and Broncos this weekend, we will have coverage starting at 10 a.m. Calvin, we don't have to get up super early.
We don't have to get up at 5 a.m., and you will be back, Chase.
I'm back. I'm going to come do the show with you, I think maybe the next couple weeks. So
yes.
So I'm going to come do the show with you starting at 10, and then, of course, the pregame show down at the George Jones on 2nd Avenue. But the Broncos, they get off to a fast start. That's something that they have done, especially last week against the Chargers. They had a 17-0 lead in the first half. It's going to be important for the defense to get off to a fast start for the Titans to remain in this game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And when you look at what the Broncos did last week, they jumped out 14-0 in the first quarter. Their first two drives resulted in touchdowns. As a matter of fact, they gained 47 yards in the first three plays. 33 of those yards were on the ground by way of Philip Lindsay. And what ended up happening is they got to a 14-0 lead. We talked about keeping things out of where Von Miller could just pin his ears back and rush the passer. You're down 17-0 that early in the game, you know, in the first half. You're going to have to throw the ball a little bit more. You still want to stick to the run. But that being said, that really helped the Broncos get off on the good foot. Okay. And then if you look at their average, they're 13th in the NFL through five games, averaging 4.8 yards or points per game in the first quarter. The Titans, we know what the issue has been.
Yeah.
Keeping teams from scoring on the opening drive. That's something that they have to do in this case. The Titans are averaging 6.8 points allowed in the first quarter. That's 27th in the NFL. The reason why I'm focusing on that, and there we can look at second, third, and fourth quarter, but the reason why I'm focusing on that is the Broncos are a 1-4 team. They're coming off their first win of the season, right? So they're going to come into this thing on a high. The momentum, they're trying to carry it over from last game to this game. The best way to shut all that down, shut them down on the first couple drives and score on your first drive. They have to do that.
Yeah, and it's been a tale of two teams because, you know, especially last week, you have the Denver Broncos getting their first win of the season. And if you go and you kind of look, it's been close. As Jeff Legwald told us earlier from ESPN that, you know, they've lost games on the last possession.
Mm-hmm.
They have been in these games that they have lost. And even though they're 1-4, and the Titans coming off a game that they probably should have won. So you have locker rooms feeling different right now. I think the Broncos have a little confidence. The Titans' confidence is shaky right now. That's where the whole fast start thing really comes into play. And I want to tie that into the head coach and Mike Vrabel. He's an emotional guy. He coaches with a lot of emotion. I know he was asked about that in his press conference this week. And kudos to you guys, the media. He needed to be pressed, and he got pressed this week because it was a game they should not have lost.
Yeah.
He was asked about the kicking situation. He was asked about the offense and various things. And he was also asked about, does he coach with a little too much emotion sometimes? Does he let his emotion and being a former player and kind of having some of that influence some of his decisions, like sending Cairo Santos out to kick a 53-yard field goal when he had been trash all day? So I'm curious of your thoughts on that and how he has maybe looked at himself and can work on that as they get ready for this game.
The thing is, there's a certain part of emotion and confidence and wanting to exhibit that confidence. There's a certain part that has to happen. And it's just unfortunate because when you show that confidence and the guys go out and they – in turn, show you why you were confident or show the media, the fans, why you were confident, you look good.
Right.
They don't, you look bad. And the best example of that is Frank Wright. You look at last year, they went for it and they didn't convert. They lost the game and everybody was killing Frank Wright. But as the games went on last year, he started to be more risky. He started to not be more risky, but continue to be risky. And then even you look at this year, going for it on 4th-and-1 on his side of the field against the Titans, getting that first down and that icing, you know, that sealing the deal. And they did it again a couple times. You look at the Monday night game. So my thing is, when you look at your offensive line, right, use them as an example. Say, okay, we need 1 yard. You know what? Daggone, I'm trusting my guys to get me one fripping yard. That's really what he's doing. He's showing confidence. Now, the whole kicker situation – I'll be honest. I'm not matter of fact, you miss three field goals. You miss a 36-yarder as one of them. Look, man, leave your jersey outside. I don't even want you going back in the locker room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because kickers during practice, you've seen it. What do? They kick. That's all they do.
That's all they do.
You got one job, man.
What did Delaney say?
Hey, you get paid a lot of money to kick. And he's right. They pay him money to, and it's just.
and Vrabel said he had confidence in him and stood by him, and then they cut him. I mean, I'm not picking on Vrabel for that, because what are you going to say? You're going to cut the guy in the press conference? You're not going to do that. And so, I thought he was honest, because he was asked about it and said, I'm going to meet with John coming up here in a few minutes, and we're going to discuss the roster like we do every week. When he said those words, I looked at Willie Donick and Darren McFarland, and I said, he gone.
Yeah, that's what that means. He was more likely gone.
Translation, he gone. And he was.
Getting back to this coaching on emotion thing, it's tough. Because, again, like I said, you want to show your guys you have faith in them.
Mm-hmm.
You want to show, and that's going to get them to, further buy into what you're doing. But, man, the guys have to execute. But even you can't have confidence and faith to a fault.
Yeah, I've been rough on Mike Vrabel lately because, it's my job. I'm going to call it like I see it. And so I've been critical of him. At the same time, I like him, and I think he's going to be a good head coach in this league. I just think sometimes, and we've been using the example you brought him up just now, Frank Reich, that they're both second-year head coaches, and Frank Reich has maybe progressed a little further than Mike Vrabel. Now, last year he had Andrew Luck at quarterback. I think his team is built a little bit better for what they do, for what they have. I think the Titans have a very solid roster. It's just piecing it all together and making it all work. And so I think Vrabel is just showing the lack of experience that he has. And, what Frank Reich did in Philadelphia as the offensive coordinator, you have to factor that in. Vrabel was a coordinator for 1 year. That's it. So this is going to take time. So I understand that there has to be a little bit of patience, but then I also understand the people, and I've been one of those, that say, okay, well, if you fire the guy that got you to the playoffs and won a playoff game because it wasn't good enough, then you don't have time to take some steps back.
It's bigger than that, though. It's bigger than that. I wasn't here under the previous head coach, but in talking to people in that building, there's a different energy.
There is.
So it's one of those things where you have a ceiling here with my hand at knee level with one coach, but then you have a ceiling and a belief of a ceiling here with my hand at shoulder level with another.
Right.
So that was done more with, okay, yeah, we did that. How much further will this guy go as compared to what this guy can? And I will say what I've been told is the energy in the building is much more upbeat, is much more positive. Obviously, right now, it's a move you could look back on and say, hey, I don't know. But I think in the future, it's a move that you're going to say it was a good one, a good decision.
And I agree with that. I think it was. And I liked Mike Mularkey a lot. But I think Mike Vrabel is the new NFL, I think, and that's what they needed. I think Mike Mularkey is a little bit of the old NFL. Now, I know Vrabel played, for Bill Belichick. He's got a little bit of the old school mentality. But you're seeing some of the new with him as well. And the way that he relates to the players in the long run, I think that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely going to be a big deal. That's a difference maker, in fact. But I think it's not only relating to the players. I think it's the energy in the building. I think it's, the coaching that you have as far as position coaches and the whole mindset, I think, is different. But you mentioned emotions. And one of the things that's interesting two things, right? What is the ultimate balancer to emotions? It's analytics. And I'm surprised that they're not using analytics more. I'm not saying, and here's the thing. Analytics, they're not a new thing, right?
Right.
Because one of the first things I asked Coach Vrabel about was him. I said, you have an old school mindset. What's your approach to analytics? And he said it correctly. We've been using analytics and numbers for a long time, right? And I'm talking about even dating back to, before the Titans even moved here. I'm talking about way, way back. Analytics have always been something, but it's kind of pressed to the forefront now, but it's always been something that they use. But my thing is, it's the ultimate balance to your gut feeling, because sometimes you get that gut feeling and it leads you the wrong way. Usually it leads you the right way, Just ask John Harbaugh with how he balances things with his analytics and his gut. The Ravens, I would say, are a good example of that. But that's one thing that needs to happen. But then the other thing that's really interesting to me is when it comes to challenging some of these calls, especially pass interference. Like, I don't know about Coach Vrabel, but you know, as a receiver, if someone interferes with me and that keeps me from catching the football, I'm pissed off.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm sure Vrabel's mad about it, but he is able to keep his emotions from making him challenge a play that he feels is not really – it's challengeable, but it's not going to get overturned because of the state of overturning the pass interference in the league right now.
Yeah, and that's been something. I know they added that in, but that's been something to see those stats. So when we come back – go ahead.
I just wanted to mention, you made the connection between Vrabel and Belichick, and you said Belichick is old school, but Belichick is sneaky, one of the most analytically inclined guys out there. Like, he won't let anybody know it. But back in the early 2000s, an article came out where Belichick was citing research papers about NFL coaches going for it more on fourth down. Belichick's out there with the new school.
All right, this is what I'm going to say.
Analytics, and this is what I want. Analytics are not new school. They're not new school.
You're actually very right.
Yes. No, it's not. Something that they've been using for quite some time.
I'm going to say this about Bill Belichick. You have the old school, the new school, and Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick has been – everybody wants to know why the Patriots are so good, why they win all the time, because he's the only head coach in the National Football League that has figured out how to adapt over the last 20 years. And Brady, at the same time, is a quarterback that has – like, you watch that game last night, and they end up winning, I think it was, 34-14 or something like that was the final score. Brady looked like he was 42 years old at times. But the way that Belichick has that all put together, it doesn't matter. He can cover it up, at least a little bit. He's adapted, and he learned that from Parcells, and he learned that from other coaches that he's worked with.
They evolved to their personnel. That's really the bottom. Like, you know, they didn't have Gronk down, an efficient, effective Gronk.
They don't have Gronk yet.
I'm talking about last year. They didn't have him down the stretch. And what did they do? They started running the football, going more 22 personnel, and we're just going to go power. So you're right. And Belichick is a little bit different because he, no matter what you put in front of him, he is able to adapt and evolve that offense.
He is Teron Davenport. I am Chase McCabe. Calvin Smith behind the glass. Chase and TD. The Titans did sign a new kicker. We'll discuss Cody Parkey when we come back. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Why you want to take this out? Oh, no. I got to keep on moving. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport. We are Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Cody Parkey is signed to the Tennessee Titans. He's going to be the new kicker. Now, he's known for being the double doinker for the Chicago Bears last year. And you know what's funny? Because we've talked kicking all week, and nothing against kickers, but generally I don't want to spend hours upon hours talking about kickers. But because Santos missed four field goals and helped the Tennessee Titans lose, you have to talk about it. Do we put too much pressure on kickers in today's NFL?
No.
Okay, good. Heck, I'm glad you agree with me, because I don't think so. You're paid to do one job, and you practice throughout practice doing that one job.
One job. And it's just like anything else. It's a synchronized thing. Everything has to be correct, for it to – be successful. Long snap rush to get it. The holder has to be able to drop that thing down, give it that little spin so the laces are facing the goalpost, and you got your steps and you kick it. So it's definitely something that it takes a relay to be correct, but at the same time, I mean, daggone, you got to make your kicks. You have to make your kicks.
The one thing that I have thought about, though, because – I know they moved the extra point back, so they tried to make it a little more difficult, but you still should be able to make that. But you do have several big-time kicks that get missed nowadays, and I wonder if it's because I look at a team like the University of Alabama, like Nick Saban apparently doesn't care about kickers because they can't find a good one. Is there not an emphasis on the kicking game in college anymore, and now that's bleeding over to the NFL?
I think there's an emphasis. I want to see what Blankenship,
Yeah.
I want to see what he does.
Titans get him?
Hey, if you want to draft a kicker, I don't know if I would do that. I mean,
no, Suckup's fine when he comes
back.
Yeah,
exactly. And then we'll get in. Actually, you know what? Let's just touch on Suckup right now, because a lot of people have asked what the deal is with him. So really, after this week, they could have him return to practice, right? Okay. So once he returns to practice, you have three weeks. You have 21 days before you could figure out whether or not he's going to be returned to IR, but season-ending IR, or are you going to put him on the 53-man? Obviously, they put him on the 53-man. Cody Parkey gets his walking papers, and he's gone. So that's the situation with Ryan Suckup. We see him in the locker room from time to time, and you know, again, it goes back to that last preseason game. It looked like he was kicking the ball fine to me, but he, at the end of the day, said he didn't have that same pop in his leg that he wanted. So here we are.
And look, it's better to be safe than sorry. Ryan Suckup has been such a reliable player for the Titans. Cody Parkey, you just want him to come in here and just make the kicks. I mean, just do your job. Understand, like, hey, you're probably only going to be here maybe 3-4 weeks. Hopefully Suckup will be able to come back, but right now you're getting a paycheck. Do your job. That's all you have to do.
And the thing is with Cody Parkey, yes, his last kick was a catastrophe, right? And, you know, we have the bad boy theme to our music. In Chicago, he's a bad boy because of that playoff loss. But one of the things I like about him is he's still confident. And he says he has the confidence because he's been successful before. Let's not forget, this is a guy who once set the record for points in a season by a rookie. He has plenty of ability. 83.9% field goals he's made. 99 out of 118. It's not like this guy is terrible. It just so happens that.
Yeah, he's known for that. Was he the kicker for the Super Bowl team for Philly?
No.
Is he gone?
He was not the kicker. How did I forget?
Because he was there. I mean, that's where he was.
He was, well,
I know he's had a few stops.
He was in Chicago.
No, I know.
His last stop.
Right, that was his last stop, but he's kicked in Philadelphia.
Yeah, Calvin, thanks for the assist. It was Jake Elliott. Jake.
Okay.
Funny story real quick. Jake Elliott kicked. He hit a 61-yarder against the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
In that game, he had a miss, and we're talking about 2017. He had a miss. You want to talk about a guy being a boss? Jason Peters. Real short and sweet, went up to Jake Elliott and he said, "No more misses." That dude proceeded to hit that 61-yarder and he was money for the rest of the year. Jason Peters is a monster too, man. Another story about Jason Peters. I remember one time in the locker room, we were in the back because his locker was back there. And he looked at, we were talking to him, and he looked, and he didn't like that there were TVs next to the locker.
Mm-hmm.
A week later, guess what was gone?
What's that?
The TVs.
The TVs.
Jason Peters is a boss.
Yeah.
But anyway, I want to see, and I thought it was interesting because John Glennon had a good story about how they treated Cody Parkey as far as talking trash to him and stuff like that. I wonder who would be the guy on the Titans to talk that trash or even just have that "no more misses" comment if he missed. I wonder who that guy would be because they were talking to him. They've kind of taken him through the ringer, you know, he's been here.
Lawan could be that guy, but I mean, you expect Lawan to talk a little trash.
I'm going with Daquan.
Daquan.
I'm going with Daquan. You ever see, Matt Calvin?
Would Jarrell be like that?
Jarrell too, but Daquan just has that intimidating. Now, I'm not intimidated by anybody, so I'm not saying that. But he has that look that could come across as intimidating. Calvin, pregame when we're standing out there, and you see number 90 walk out.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
because he comes out by himself.
Oh, yeah.
Just a slow walker. You're like, dang, that's a big bama right there, man.
Well, you know who I think it'd be? I think it'd be Derrick Henry. The quiet guy, big, strong, the most intimidating guy out there. He just walks up to you, just a couple words, hey, no more of that. No more misses here.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Derrick Henry reminds me of the guy of, like, I'm thinking it was Major League or something, but, you know, the quiet guy in the locker room. Then, like, throughout the whole movie, doesn't say anything.
Pedro. You talking about Pedro in Major League?
Yeah, well, Pedro Serrano. I mean, he talked some, like, you know,
I'm
about
trying
Jobu.
To think which quiet guy you're talking about.
Well, and it may not be. I'm just thinking like a movie in general. If you have the sports movie, and there's the, you know, the guy that just, he doesn't say anything. And then at the very, very end of the movie where it's like, they got to win this game, Derrick Henry's going to stand up and be like, let's win the whole blanking thing or something like that.
Henry reminds me of the Predator, man.
Yeah.
That's what he reminds me of.
One thing I do want to say as we wrap up the kicking conversation, Cairo Santos has to make those kicks. As Delanie Walker said, he gets paid a lot of money to make those kicks. Cody Parkey's going to have to do the same thing. But at the same time, when you talk about doing your job, they got to get out of this third and long situation that they're in. They have to be able to have third and manageable and get and convert on these third downs. That's where a lot of this stems from, that the offense has to be able to do what they're supposed to do so they're not in a position to kick a 53-yard field goal.
Yeah, I mean, that has to happen. A part of that is the sacks. A part of that is the penalties. So they definitely have to keep things in a more manageable, a more makeable situation. But that 53-yarder was missed, but, you know, the first miss was from 36 yards. And the thing is, going forward with Cody Parkey, I want to see – You know how that works as far as the confidence in him. They picked Santos over Parkey, and they had them both working out at the same time. We actually asked Vrabel, one of the reporters on Wednesday asked Vrabel about the selection of Parkey now after going with Santos initially. Here's his quote on that.
We just have to make sure that we're doing everything we can to get him ready for the game. Denver, that's it's a huge challenge. We're going to need to make sure that we score points every chance that we get. You know, when we get it down there, their defense is very good defense, not giving up a lot of yards, very good against the pass. So that he's just going to be one piece of the puzzle, and you know, we'll work with him here like we do all the other players.
There you go. Mike Vrabel on the kicking situation and signing Cody Parkey. So we'll see. You know, the Mile High City is – the air is thin, so I guess that makes it a little easier to kick in. But we'll see if he gets some big kicks as the Titans take on the Broncos. When we come back, it's the Mock Daddy. We will discuss that, plus our players to watch on offense and defense for both teams. Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game.
This is Rashawn Evans, linebacker for the Tennessee Titans. You listen to Chase and TD.
Who's the Mock Daddy?
Mock Daddy.
Back here, Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5, the game streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport, Calvin Smith here with you. Reminder, coming up Sunday morning at 10 a.m., Calvin and I will have the kickoff, getting you ready for Titans and Broncos because it's a later game. And then, of course, we'll have the pregame show coming from the George Jones on 2nd Avenue. With Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders as well. So it is time for the Mock Daddy of the week. And listen, there wasn't a lot to choose from in that loss to the Buffalo Bills. I know you both were there, and prayers to you that you sat through that.
Hey, I don't mind, man.
I know.
I watched the good and the bad, man.
There were actually a couple of guys that I had in mind. I continue to be impressed with Logan Ryan. I just pay this man already. Just don't let him leave. He's become a leader on this team. He's doing such a great job. So he was in consideration. But from an offensive standpoint, I got to give it to the big dog. I'm going Derrick Henry. 20 carries. He had the lone touchdown. 78 yards. 24-yard run for him. I know you're kind of... I don't know if you agree with that, but I'm going with the big man.
There aren't many times where you'll get me to go against something on Derrick Henry. You guys know.
That's your guy.
I literally pound this table for Derrick Henry. However, I liked where you were going with Logan Ryan. He had a sack. He impacted a couple. He actually had he impacted the interception. Yeah. He also had made Josh Allen escape the pocket and get tackled. That was the one where Rashawn Evans blew him up on the third down. I thought you were going Logan Ryan. He had a sack, like I said, and he has more sacks since 2018 than most secondaries as a group in the league. But
you've convinced me. I'll go with my initial analysis. I'll go Logan Ryan.
Dang, man, you're not even going to give me a fight?
No.
Oh, man, I couldn't even get a fight.
I'm backpedaling like Logan Ryan does. I'm playing the position.
No, nah, listen, man, you can't go wrong in my mind when you say Derrick Henry. But I my guy would be Logan Ryan. But that's okay. It's okay. It's all right to differ. What to watch for on offense from the Titans? Who are you going with in this game?
Well, I've cheated and looked, you know, because you have it here in the grid. We are on the same wavelength because we're in the same position group. I'm going to Taylor Lewan.
Mm-hmm.
I need to see what he looks like in game two because game one wasn't very good. Game two, let's see how he looks. Now, that leads us to yours.
Right, and for me, it is an extension of Lewan. They are the stepbrothers, right? Yeah. And that's Roger Saffold. And the reason why I'm going with Roger Saffold is I want to see – I'm expecting, like we said earlier, it's a copycat lead. So what are you going to see? You're going to see more stunts.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something about Derek Wolfe. That dude is very good along the interior. He's a disruptor. I want to see if they run – the tackle stunts.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see how – basically, here's the deal. Whatever stunt they do is almost always going to have Roger Saffold as one of the guys to stop. Whether it's T.E., you know, yeah. With Von Miller and the D-tackle on the right side of the defense, the left side of the offense, or it's the tackle because you will see that as well. I want to see how Saffold is able to hold up against that. That's the thing, and that's why he's a big factor for me because, again, this is something that continues to plague this team. I want to see how they make that adjustment and get it right.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line, that left side, is just going to be uber important for the Titans to win. Now, offensive players to watch for the Denver Broncos, I'll start with you.
Well, I'm going with Courtland Sutton, man, because in watching the games, he's that get-out-of-trouble card for Joe Flacco.
Mm-hmm.
Third and long. They're finding a way to get him the football. And at 6'4", 220-plus, he's a guy that could climb that ladder, go up and own the football when it's coming to him. So he's the guy for me. Like I said, they move him across the formation. They even use him to influence coverage to allow other guys to get the ball as well. So he's the one to watch for me.
For me, it's going to be Phillip Lindsay. Phillip Lindsay is such a talented running back. We talked about him earlier in the show, the story, you know, coming into the league last year. He wears number 30, you know, representing Terrell Davis. So I think that he's going to be somebody that I know you don't like that. I think he's going to be somebody the Titans are going to have to shut down because while Joe Flacco isn't the same Joe Flacco that he was 3-4 years ago for the Baltimore Ravens, he has weapons, and that's what's going to make him successful. Phillip Lindsay is one of those.
Yeah, listen. He's the better of the two backs, too.
Yeah.
When you look at defense, for me, and it actually has a bit to do with Phillip Lindsay, right? And for me, my player for the Titans is Kenny Vaccaro, man. I'm going with
Kenny Vaccaro.
With Kenny. Low key, quietly, he's really done a solid job as a defender in his second year with the Titans in this defense.
He was a gift, too. The fact that he was on the street when Sip went down, when Jonathan Cyprian went down, and they were able to sign him, and now look, I mean, he's one of the staples on defense. I mean, he was a gift.
Yeah, oh, he was definitely a gift. And the thing is, in signing him, like moving on from Cyprian and having him take over, they suddenly got more versatile because Cyprian is strictly a box guy. But when you look at Vaccaro, he could bump out and he could give you some reps as a nickel. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you need it, he could do that. But then you see him in the single high post. You also see him, you know, in the two deep, very interchangeable with Kevin Byard. I feel Vaccaro is key in this game just because his ability to cover backs out of the backfield. I think an early thump on Lindsay could kind of set the tone, you know, with him come. Because what we say, they run the Texas combo. They run the circle routes. Mm-hmm. So with the two guys being out, Cameron Wake and Sharif Finch, I expect them to use a little more nickel. When you have a guy like Vaccaro, you could drop him down in the box, and he's essentially a linebacker. Now, obviously, you're not going to use him to come off the edge, you know, as far as rushing the passer, but he gives you the ability to be strong against the run in your nickel package, and you could also be solid against the pass, especially when you go big nickel, right, when you have Amani Hooker in the game too.
The one that I'm going to pick on – defense for the Tennessee Titans, somebody we talked about earlier, Harold Landry. Harold Landry, is the pass rush is going to be important for them. Joe Flacco, we know what Joe Flacco is. The offensive line that Mike Munchak is working with there in Denver has gotten better as the year has gone on, but they are going to have to get pressure on Joe Flacco, and I think Harold Landry is the man for the job. I mean, 4 sacks on the year. You put the minimum at 10. I think he's well on his way.
Yeah, no doubt. Excellent selection there. For me, Broncos defense, I'm going Derek Wolfe. The easiest direction from one place to the other is straightforward. I think it's going to be really important how they defend him because, like I said, he's very disruptive. Nate Davis is going to have his hands full. Roger Saffold, Ben Jones are going to have their hands full. He's a key player in that defense.
Mine's an easy choice. He only has 2 sacks, but you got to respect this man. You got to fear this man. It's Von Miller. Mm-hmm. The Titans are going to have – you know, it goes back to our players to watch on offense. We both picked offensive linemen. They get to know Von Miller because he's going to be up in your grill throughout this game.
Yeah, the chicken man, man. Von Miller with the chicken coop, man. He names the chickens after his players.
He's a good dresser, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He got some swag. I'll give it to him. He has some swag, man.
So how does this thing turn out as we wrap things up, another edition of Chase and TD? Because Darren asked me that question earlier today when we wrapped up the midday show, and I said, I don't know. I don't know because I really don't. I don't know how this is supposed to go. My gut wants to tell you that the Titans are a better team and they should win the game, but they should have beaten Indianapolis. They should have beaten Buffalo. They could have been more in the game against Jacksonville. I can't figure this team out right now.
You know, in my predictions for ESPN.com, I picked the Broncos, but yeah, I'm going Titans 19-17. That's what I'm going with.
Pretty low scoring, both under 20 points, 2-point game. I like that. We do a segment on the midday show called Pick 6, and they have to pick the team or the game total for this game. Had a lot of low scoring, like in the 30s, something like that. So I'm with you. I think the Titans, they edge it out. I think they're getting 1.5 on the line. So I'll say 21-17 is what I'll go with. Tennessee Titans.
There you go.
So we'll see how it turns out. Safe travels to you as you head to the Mile High City. Calvin, I will see you Sunday morning at 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game as we have the kickoff. The Tennessee Titans, the Denver Broncos, and then that's all followed by the pregame show down at the George Jones on 2nd Avenue. Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, Chris Sanders, they will get you ready for Titans and Broncos. That's going to do it. Chase and TD every Friday on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.